He said he had a gift. He had a little business card which he gave to me. And it said on it, Ian, worship leader. And he came to me and he said, I've got this gift. I can lead worship. I write songs. I teach congregations how to sing them. I play the guitar and I lead worship. And I could do that in your church. And he said he had a gift. And I just feel that this passage that we're going to be looking at, Romans chapter 12, which is on page 1139 in the church Bibles, maybe we can use what it says in this passage and say, well, what does the Bible say to someone who comes up to us and says, I've got a gift and I could use it in your church? How do we judge that? Do we say, yes, that's what it says in the Bible. Come in tomorrow, start straight away. Or do we say, but it says this in the Bible and it says that in the Bible? And we come to Romans chapter 12, and it's a really, really, really practical chapter of the Bible. It tells us in very straight language how we are to work as a church, how we are to function as the body of Christ in this place. And I found it extremely helpful when I was a young Christian. So helpful, I thought, I will just memorize all of it. This is so good. This is real useful stuff. And over the years, I've come to appreciate the other bits of Romans as well. But that's where I started. And we're looking, as we go through our morning services at the moment, at the book of Romans. And the idea is to encourage us all to have a look at it and learn from it, because it's just got so much in it, a fantastic book of the Bible. And we're basing it around a series of sermons, a series of messages, which has been put together by Terry in his book, Making Sense of Romans When You Read It For Yourself. And there's a few things that he encourages us to do. One of them is to make sense of Romans the same way as we make sense of other things in the world today. We're talking to somebody who had tea with us yesterday, and she said, my dad lives in Nevada, or lived in Nevada, and he had some rabbits that needed to be neutered. So he looked it up on the internet, and he sorted out the rabbits, having looked it up on YouTube. There are many things that we can learn using the wonders of modern technology, including studying the book of Romans. So much less exciting, perhaps, you feel, but it's all there. Lots and lots of online tools that can help us to study Romans. And then there are three lenses through which Terry encourages us to look at the whole of the book of Romans: faith, hope, and love. And without getting into stacks and I've got some books here about Romans. Stacks and stacks of books and study materials that kind of maybe put us off. Just taking something fairly straightforward: faith, hope, and love, and looking at Romans through those lenses. Well, we're going to be looking particularly at verse 6, 7, and 8 this morning. And Romans chapter 12, verse 6 says this: we have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. We have different gifts. Now, I believe that Paul was writing this to the Roman church, which he hadn't been to, and that he basically didn't want that church to make some of the same mistakes that he'd seen in other churches, because what seemed to happen to Paul was he went and he preached somewhere, and then sooner or later there were riots, and then he had to move on and preach somewhere else. And some of the riots were to do with what people thought was about Jews and Gentiles and so on. But some of the difficulties that he had experienced in Corinth, and he writes a similar message to Corinthians, is about spiritual gifts. And people had got this idea that there was some kind of, you know, if you're a new Christian, you had this little gift, and then you, a bit like they have in the Freemasons, you know, you move up the first degree, the second degree, the third degree, and as you got more and more clever and into it, you would have more and more powerful gifts, and there would sort of be a hierarchy, and you would move up it. And Paul just wanted to nip that in the bud in Romans before he'd even been there, and he wrote to them and said, we have different gifts. They're just different. The point is not that this one is something that you can only do at certain times and you work your way up to it. They are just different. And the other point is, they're gifts. We can't really boast about them and say, look what I can do, because we've been given them. They are gifts to us. And those of you who've been following through the challenge to read the New Testament in a year, and there's still some sheets out in the foyer if you haven't picked that up, a yellow sheet, read through the New Testament in the year. Well, this Thursday you would have read Matthew 25 and the story of the talents and how the master gave to certain servants. He had three servants. He gave one talent, one two talents, and the third person he gave five talents to. And then they did different things with those gifts. So the one who had two talents went and made two talents more. The one who had five talents went and ended up with five talents more. And the one who had one talent buried it in the ground. And when his master came back, he said, here it is, it's safe and sound, I kept it for you. And that master said, you should have used the talents. So we have different gifts, according to the grace given to us, and we are to use them. So, if we go and have a look at the next verses, Romans chapter 12 and verse 7 and 8, 6, 7 and 8, we have this. We have seven gifts. That's a nice Bible number, isn't it? If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. And prophesying nowadays, we tend to think of prophesying as saying what's going to happen in the future. And the prophets do say what's going to happen in the future, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just say, this is what God says. And I think of Jonah. Jonah said to the people of Nineveh, you know what's going to happen in the future? You know, terrible fire and brimstone is going to come down and you're all going to be wiped out. It didn't actually happen, but it was still a message from God saying, if you don't change, that's what's going to happen to you. So prophesying is giving God's message, which may or may not be about the future. And if your gift is prophesying, then he says, then do it in accordance with your faith. And there's that word, faith, hope, and love. We've been looking at faith, hope, and love. Here's faith, in accordance with your faith, with the amount of faith that God has given you, in the way that is in accordance with faith. Some of the prophets, we're told in another part of the Bible, someone prophesies, you should weigh it and measure it. Is it in accordance with the faith that we have received? If your gift is serving, then serve. That word for serving is used in Acts chapter 6. And I'm just going to refer to just a couple of verses out there, so you don't need to turn to it. But Acts chapter 6, I'll just read this little piece. In those days, when the number of disciples was increasing, the Hellenistic Jews amongst them complained against the Hebraic Jews because their widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. So the 12 gathered all the disciples together and said, it would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the word of God in order to wait on tables. Brothers and sisters, choose seven men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn this responsibility over to them and will give our attention to the prayer and ministry of the word. Now that's our English translation, and a lot of people have sort of got the impression that this gift, if it is serving, that's the bit about distributing food. That is serving. But if you look at the words of the original text, you will see that the same word is used for what is translated wait on tables as is translated ministry of the word. So that word to wait on, and that word ministry is the same word as is translated in Romans chapter 12, serving. They're different gifts, but they're both serving gifts. Serving, ministering, waiting, serving. Your gift is serving, then serve. If your gift is teaching, then teach. And teaching is vital, especially for new believers, to be taught about the faith. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. And again, interesting to think about the word that's used here for encouraging. If you look at the first verse of the chapter, it says, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters." That word urge is the same word as this word encourage. Sometimes encouragement is comforting and consoling and conciliating. Sometimes it's urging. Sometimes that urging is publicly from the pulpit. Sometimes that urging is privately, one-to-one. And it's a word about getting alongside somebody and encouraging them. I read a very challenging book at one stage with the title, "Don't Wait Till He's Dead." And it was started off, and the guy wrote the book because he'd been to a funeral service, and he'd heard people say wonderful things about the person who just died. And he thought, what a shame that they didn't say those things to that person while they were still alive. Don't wait till he's dead. If your gift is encouraging, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. Generously could also be translated freely, without ulterior motives. Unfortunately, sometimes we have this view, and we have our little proverbs, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And we like to give money with strings attached. And this teaches us not to. It says, if your ability, the gift that God's given you, is giving, then give generously without ulterior motives. And trust God, because he gives, and he gives abundantly, so can we. If it is to lead, then do it diligently. If you look at the notes in this translation of the Bible, you'll see if it is to lead, there's a little note next to it that possibly you could translate to lead as to provide for others and care for others. Whichever it is, do it diligently. Doing it diligently is doing it eagerly, being in a hurry to do it with haste. We have been looking in the evening services at 1 Thessalonians, and it says to hold in highest regard those who work hard amongst you. There is no mention in 1 Thessalonians of who the actual leaders of the church are, but it does mention people who work hard among you. So verse 11 of this chapter talks about never be lacking in zeal. And I think that applies to this gift. And then we have showing mercy. If your gift is to show mercy, then do it cheerfully. And verse 16 in this chapter talks about, do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. And showing mercy, we've just been thinking and praying about showing mercy. Showing mercy to people outside the church, people on the fringes of our church, people who don't have enough to eat, people who don't have a home to live in. This gift, I believe, was to be showing mercy to people inside the church, but it's the same sort of a ministry. So, this chap, Ian, who said he had a gift for leading music, worship, should I say to him, well, it's not in Romans chapter 12. It's none of those seven gifts, so it isn't a spiritual gift. So that's not something that we want you to do. Well, I don't think so, because there are other parts of the Bible which talk about more gifts, different gifts. So there are other gifts, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. There are more in the book of Ephesians. There's more in the 1 Peter. There's some things mentioned in Thessalonians, gifts and ministries. And talking of some different gifts, Val, could you just share with us? Thank you.
Thank you. Right, I'm going to share about the gift of knowledge. That led to something rather exciting for me. I'm going back to when I was in my early 40s, and I began to have trouble with my right knee. It started to give me pain. I thought, oh, osteoarthritis, I guess, like my mother and grandmother. And one day when I came into church here to worship. Actually, I was sitting on this side of the church. And the pain was quite excruciating suddenly in my right knee, really bad. And I just simply said, "Oh, please, Lord, could you do something about my knee?" And immediately, and it was immediately, somebody stood up just a few rows in front of me. It was Alan Saw, actually, some of you will know. And he said something like, "There's a woman here who has pain in her knee the Lord wants to heal." And I was out the front in a flash. In fact, the pastor was Keith at the time, and he was saying, "Could that person come forward? I'm here, I'm here." And I remember Alan saying to me, "I don't even really need to pray for you." And from that time on, I had no problems at all in my right knee. So that's the gift of knowledge and the gift of miracles, I guess, too. And before they call, I will answer.
Thank you. So many different types of gifts. Gifts of healing, gifts of a message, of knowledge, and many more that we don't have time to go into. But the point, one of the points about the gifts is that they are there to work together. I had two aunts who went to Zambia, and they went to work there with disadvantaged children. Some were blind, some were crippled. And they went to work, this is years ago, in a society where people didn't really want to have disabled children. They would take them down to the riverside and just leave them there to die. And my aunts set up a care home for them and got these children in and cared for them. And one of the things that they used to do is they used to put them in pairs. And the ones who were blind had very good legs and could run perfectly well. And the ones who were crippled had to sit in a wheelchair, but they could see where to go. And they put them in a pair and they could help each other. So whilst one had a gift of sight and one had a gift of good legs, those two gifts could help each other. And in a similar way, if you read Terry's book and if you look stuff up on the internet, you will discover that a chap called Meredith Belbin put together some studies about how teams work in management. And he did a lot of study in Henley Management College, not far away from here. And he discovered that the best teams for doing things have a combination of different skills. And it's not that one skill makes for a good team. Like if you've got a good leader, they will make things happen. Or if you've got somebody who's very clever, they will get to the right solution. Or if you've got somebody who is very good at motivating people, that team will do best. Actually, in your team, you need a bit of all of those things. And he came up with 9 different sort of things that he thought a team should have in it. And one of the things was that you need them all. You need them all to help each other. And you can't really say that a team will work unless you've got a bit of everything. A very similar thing to what we're looking at with these gifts. And what Paul was writing to the church and saying, the important thing is not that you have the most important gift, or that you have a better gift than someone else. The important thing is that in the body, we have all the gifts and they all work together because that's how it's supposed to be. The gifts that we have are gifts to work together. The gifts that we have are gifts for each other. That's what they're given for, so that we can help each other. There is a parable that isn't in the Bible that I find rather helpful when we're thinking about this sort of thing. And it is that once upon a time, an angel came and showed a person a vision. And he took them to this place where he saw a huge table with lovely, lovely food on it and everything that you could fancy to eat. And all the people around it were really upset and annoyed because they couldn't bend their elbows. And they had these spoons strapped to their arms, but they couldn't actually get the food in the spoons into their mouths because their arms were strapped. And so they were all distressed. And the person watching this vision said, oh my goodness, this must be like hell, because there's all this lovely food and you just can't get to it. And the angel took the person to another place. And in this other place, there was a table. And it had lots of lovely food on it. And all the people around the table were very happy. And he looked at these people and they all had spoons strapped to their arms and they couldn't bend their arms, so they couldn't put their spoon into their mouths. So what they were doing is they were using their spoon to feed one of their friends. And the friend was using his spoon to feed him. So it was the same situation, but one was like heaven and one was like hell. The gifts are given to us to help each other. They're not given to us to make us feel good. They're not given to us for our own benefit. They are given to us to use in the body for each other. They are gifts for each other. In Christ, we, though many, form one body. And each member belongs to all the others. And I think that's a really important principle when we're thinking about how do I use my gift. If I'm going to use my gift because I feel I belong to the other people in the body, that's a good use of the gift. If I'm going to use my gift because I want to make sure everybody notices me, that isn't a good use of my gift. In Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 12, there's a lot more about the body. But in Romans, it's just very briefly mentions that we are part of one body. And just as a body has different parts that do different things, but they're all one body and they all belong to the same body, that's how we are to be in the church. We are to use our gifts for each other in the body. And we are to use them in love. Use our gifts in love. We've got Valentine's Day coming up in a couple of days, haven't we? And somebody advised me you can go to McDonald's and get a Valentine's rose. So, if you haven't got any ideas, there you go. Four different words for love in this chapter of Romans 12. Four different words for love. And none of them are Valentine's romantic love, actually, because the Greeks had yet another word for that. But one of the words he says is love must be sincere. Paul writes in verse 9 of this chapter. Love must be sincere. And the love he's talking about there is what we might call Christian love. The love of God. Unconditional. Pure love. Love must be sincere. We are to love one another. And that's the context for using these gifts. If we look at the gifts, we can see the bit before talks about being a body. The bit after talks about love. Then he talks about a different word for love, to be devoted to. And that's the love of brothers and sisters. It's a family love, love of brothers and sisters for one another. And he says, you are to be devoted to each other. You are to show brother and sisterly love. Be devoted to one another in love. So there's the third one. And that love is the sort of love that parents have for children. Another kind of family love, a love of a mother and a father for their children. And then in verse 13, he says, practice hospitality. And that word hospitality actually means love of strangers. So there's another kind of love, love of strangers, love of God, love for brothers and sisters, love of parents for children, love for strangers. And that's something that we need, isn't it? Love for strangers. In our fellowship, one of our values is to welcome people who are different from us and to love them. Our gifts are to be used in love, and our gifts are to be used with faith. We are to think of ourselves not more highly than we ought, but rather think of ourselves with sober judgment, in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of us. We measure ourselves, in other words, by faith. Are we in line with God's faith? That's how we're to use our gifts. We're to think of ourselves in a sober way, in a realistic way, if you like. One of the things about gifts is it's very difficult to measure ourselves and to know whether we've got a gift. If you're naturally good at something, if you've been good at something for a while, it just comes so easily, you sort of think, why does everybody else struggle? And that's one extreme. So you think you haven't got a gift because it just comes so easily. And the other extreme is you are so keen to show it off that you overestimate what you've got. And Paul encourages us to have renewed minds and to think of ourselves carefully. What is this gift? Measure it by faith, and then to offer it for being used in accordance with the faith God has given to us. And another thing that I was really struck by when I was preparing this is how we are to use our gifts as spiritual worship. This translation that we use in the church now describes in Romans chapter 12, verse 1, it says, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Your true and proper worship. And it just made me think of John chapter 4, the woman at the well. Jesus told the woman at the well, a time is coming and is now when the true worshippers will worship God in spirit and in truth. And then we see here, Paul describes how we are to be. He says we are to be living sacrifices, and that is our true and proper worship. That is what worship is supposed to be. And Paul, having written so much in this book of Romans about Jews and Gentiles and the way that Jews relied on circumcision and they relied on the law, and he almost seems to be saying, and they relied on sacrifices, but the true and proper worship is for us to be living sacrifices and to use our gifts for one another. And that's how we can be a living sacrifice. In the context of Greek thought, it would have been quite a shock to talk about using your body to worship God, because their idea about religion was that it was all about mental stuff, that you had greater and greater knowledge, and that helped you to be a good worshipper. But this is very practical. It says what we do with our bodies is our worship. So if we have these spiritual gifts, they are to be used in the context of what it says in the rest of chapter 12 of Romans and the whole book of Romans and the whole Bible. Our worship is to be part, our use of our gifts is to be part of sacrificial worship. It is to be a way of belonging to one another. Our use of our spiritual gifts is to be realistic, honouring others above ourselves. It's to be happy and wholehearted. Rejoice in hope. Give cheerfully. It is to be in faith and hope and love. So thinking of Ian, was his offer part of sacrificial worship? I have to say, I don't know. Was his offer to come and lead worship at our church a way of belonging to us? I would say no. I actually encouraged him to come along and to become part of us if he wanted to use that gift with us. Was he being realistic? Was he honoring other people above himself? One of the things about gifts is that if we're going to use them in a body, we might realize that the gifts that we want to use, actually somebody else in the body has a better gift in that area than we do. And he had no idea whether that was the case in this church or not, because he was just coming from the outside. So I suggest probably not. Was he happy and wholehearted? I think he was. I think he genuinely wanted to use his gift to the maximum. Was he using it in faith, in hope, and love? Well, I kind of think that he was moving on from another church where he felt that he wasn't being able to use his gift very much, and he was just looking for a church where he could use his gift, which is not the right way round. We belong to a church first and then we use our gifts rather than the other way around. As we close, I'd just like to read to you from the Message version of Romans chapter 12. I do like the Message version, but I have to say it's not particularly word for word. You will hear words in this that are nowhere in the other translations of the Bible. So it's halfway between being a translation and being a sermon. But I hope you find it as helpful as I have found it. Romans chapter 12, verse 1. So, here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. I'm speaking to you out of deep gratitude for all that God has given me, and especially as I have responsibilities in relation to you. Living then, as every one of you does, in pure grace, it's important that you not misinterpret yourselves as people who are bringing this goodness to God. No, God brings it all to you. The only accurate way to understand ourselves is by what God is and by what he does for us, not by what we are and what we do for him. In this way, we are like the various parts of a human body. Each part gets its meaning from the body as a whole, not the other way round. The body we're talking about is Christ's body of chosen people. Each of us finds our meaning and function as a part of his body. But as a chopped off finger or a cut off toe, we wouldn't amount to much, would we? So, since we find ourselves fashioned into all these excellently formed and marvelously functioning parts in Christ's body, let's just go ahead and be what we were made to be, without enviously and proudly comparing ourselves with each other, or trying to be something we aren't. If you preach, just preach God's message, nothing else. If you help, just help. Don't take over. If you teach, stick to your teaching. If you give encouraging guidance, be careful that you don't get bossy. If you're put in charge, don't manipulate. If you're called to give aid to people in distress, keep your eyes open and be quick to respond. If you work with the disadvantaged, don't let yourself get irritated with them or depressed by them. Keep a smile on your face. Love from the center of who you are. Don't fake it. Run for dear life from evil. Hold on for dear life to good. Be good friends who love deeply. Practice playing second fiddle. Don't burn out. Keep yourselves fueled and aflame. Be alert servants of the Master, cheerfully expectant. Don't quit in hard times. Pray all the harder. Help needy Christians. Be inventive in hospitality. Bless your enemies. No cursing under your breath. Laugh with your happy friends when they're happy. Share tears when they're down. Get along with each other. Don't be stuck up. Make friends with nobodies. Don't be the great somebody. Don't hit back. Discover beauty in everyone. If you've got it in you, get along with everybody. Don't insist on getting even. That's not for you to do. I'll do the judging, says God. I'll take care of it. Our scriptures tell us that if you see your enemy hungry, go buy that person lunch. Or if he's thirsty, get him a drink. Your generosity will surprise him with goodness. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good.